court is now in session.
Okay, thank you. Welcome everyone to this session. We appreciate you being here. And just a reminder that you are not permitted to photograph, videotape, audio tape this proceeding. As well, when you are talking about the record, we appreciate citations to the record. And finally, rebuttal is for rebuttal only. With that, remember to mute yourself when it's not your turn, but to unmute yourself when it is your turn. We're not very good at lip reading. Okay, with that, we will begin with Mr. Parker on behalf of the City of Schertz.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon, and may it please the court. My name is James Parker, and I represent the appellant, the City of Schertz. The central issue before the court in this case is whether the court's 2017 decision in Green Valley Special Utility District versus City of Cibolo remains good law in light of more recent Supreme Court precedent and also in light of the en banc court's decision in Green Valley Sud versus City of Schertz.
So I'm glad you got right to the point. I was on the en banc court, as my colleagues were. I joined an opinion saying that Cibolo should be overruled. But I think only maybe four of my colleagues joined that opinion, maybe five in total. So we decide, I wish it had been different. But, it's still good law, at least to the extent that it is not inconsistent with North Alamo. So I guess my question, that's not much of a question. My question is, to what extent does your argument depend on Cibolo being bad law? Because, it's still good, right?
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, I think we would disagree with that in light of more recent Supreme Court precedent. In Nielsen versus Preap, and in Cochise Consultancy versus United States. Cibolo is a statutory interpretation case. And now it happens to be that the statute that it was interpreting is 1926B, but it is a statutory interpretation case. And from Cibolo comes the rule of statutory interpretation. And I'll quote here that Congress's use of the is not decisive. The Supreme Court in those two cases decided within the last 18 months has expressly rejected the Cibolo rule of statutory construction. In both cases have held that when Congress uses the direct article the, followed by a single noun, here it's the service, that Congress uses that language purposefully, and we have to apply the plain meaning. And that means a single, specific, particular service. In Nielsen, it was the alien under the Immigration and Nationality Act. The alien who is subject to the mandatory detention provisions in that statute. And the Supreme Court held that the alien is the alien who is defined in the previous subsection.
I don't recall. Did those cases come out after our en banc decision?
No, Your Honor. They're not after the en banc decision. They're before the en banc decision. But the en banc decision didn't do anything with respect to Cibolo. It didn't overturn Cibolo, it didn't confirm Cibolo, it just said in footnote 39, we're not reaching Cibolo. And so the issue of Cibolo is something that needs to be saved for another day because we don't need to get there in this case. Well, but today is that day. So the en banc court didn't get into Nielsen, didn't get into Cochise County because it was enough to overturn the district court's decision in GB Sud.
Go ahead.
No, I just didn't remember if Chief Judge Owen's partial dissent that I joined that would have overruled Cibolo. Did she discuss these cases?
Your Honor, she did not. She didn't discuss the case. She came to the same decision independently, which I think is a very clear and straightforward reading of the statute that when you have the direct article and a singular noun, that means one. And that was not reached by the en banc court because it was enough to overturn the district court's decision in G.B. Sud simply because it applied the wrong standard. It applied North Alamo rather than the pipes in the ground standard. But had it gotten there.
Okay, but was there anything in Cochise or Nielsen that said, woo, we're announcing a new rule 240 years down the road. We have a new way of looking at what the word the means. Or were they simply applying many, many years of precedent to the particulars of that case?
Your Honor, I think that's a good question. It doesn't really cite, neither case cites a whole lot of precedent for the concept that the use of the direct article following a single noun is decisive. It doesn't cite a long line of cases going up to it. It actually cites Justice Scalia's and Brian Gardner's treatise on reading statutes. So from that standpoint, I would say, yes, it is a new rule, and it is very unequivocal. And from that standpoint, Nielsen in particular is perhaps new from the standpoint that it very clearly says that the alien, the direct article followed by the singular noun, that's determinative. And that is directly contrary to the rule of statutory construction that was written by in the Cibolo decision.
Okay, so let me ask you a question, getting back to what Judge Duncan was asking you regarding the en banc opinion. Is it your position that though the opinion says we don't get to Cibolo today, you believe the en banc majority opinion, not Judge Owen's opinion, but the majority opinion, legally licenses and authorizes this panel to take up now what was put aside at that time? In other words, rule in your favor based upon the en banc majority opinion?
Yes, Your Honor. The en banc majority opinion, even aside from Nielsen and aside from Cochise County, kicks the foundation out from under Cibolo. Cibolo rests on the inference that it takes from North Alamo. North Alamo says that 1926B gets a liberal interpretation. And from that, the Cibolo case decides that we're going to take that literal interpretation and we're going to create a tie goes to the runner rule on 1926B. It says that this is a close rule of statutory interpretation. I think in light of Nielsen and Cochise County, it's no longer a close question of statutory interpretation, but it says this is a close issue of statutory interpretation. In this close call, the tie goes to the runner. The en banc court kicked that foundation out from under the Cibolo decision, and is very clear that there is no tie goes to the runner rule on 1926B, that the court is bound by the plain language of the statute. Here, the plain language of the statute protects the service that is provided or made available. That is a single particular service. And there's no tie goes to the runner in light of Nielsen and in light of Cochise County. That means one service, and it's the service.
Okay, let me explain a little bit about the rule of orderliness, which is that there has to be an intervening change in law. When the Supreme Court clearly did not decide a 1926 issue in these other cases, it was a totally different statute. They're looking at the They had talked about the before, at least in Work versus U.S. 262 U.S. 200, a 1923 case, so many years before. We recognized in Cibolo that they had talked about the before. It wasn't something new. And the Supreme Court decisions in Cochise and Nielsen were other statutes. Now, I'm not saying that's irrelevant, but I'm saying that for the rule of orderliness, you need a pretty explicit overturning of our decision and not just we would guess the Supreme Court might go the other way. Of course, since they denied cert in Cibolo, but anyway, that we would guess they would go the other way, that gives us the right as a panel to overturn a prior decision. So regardless of whether Cibolo is right, we need more than just a guess that the Supreme Court's kind of getting more careful about their textual analysis of statutes than they were before. That's not enough to give us the right to overturn a prior decision, whether we agree with it or not.
Well, I certainly understand that and appreciate that, Your Honor. And I'm not, respectfully, not asking the court to do anything radical, and certainly not asking the court to reject the rule of orderliness. What I'm asking the court to do is follow the Supreme Court precedent in 2019. And understanding that there were previous cases that talked about the direct article. However, I think these cases from 2019, Nielsen and Cochise County, are far more unequivocal and far more specific than what came previously, to the point that if Cibolo were to come out, were to come up to the court today for the first time, it would not be a close call. In light of those Supreme Court decisions, the court would not adopt the rule of statutory construction that it adopted in 2017. The court in 2017 was very specific and had a very specific holding that Congress's use of the is not decisive. That holding has been rejected by the Supreme Court. That decision has been rejected by the Supreme Court, admittedly on other statutes. But within those statutes, we're talking about the same thing. We're talking about the direct article. And so the rule on which Cibolo rests has been soundly rejected by the Supreme Court. And Schertz is not asking the court to reverse Cibolo, to reverse that rule adopted by the Cibolo court. I think what we're asking the court to do is recognize that the Supreme Court has already done that for it, well, and to apply Supreme Court precedent.
So let's look at some options here. Let's assume that we don't agree with you and that this panel is bound to apply Cibolo, meaning that the 1926B monopoly protection applies both to water and wastewater. Does that mean that you lack a cognizable injury under Article 3?
I really hate Your Honor's hypothetical, but yes, in your Honor's hypothetical, yes, that's correct.
It's a hateful hypothetical. I mean,
wow.
I agreed with Judge.
And this is somebody who joined the dissenting opinion you like.
That's what I'm saying. It's hard for me to make this hypothetical. I joined Chief Judge Owens, and I wish all my colleagues had joined that. It grieves me to this day, but they didn't, you know. So if we're bound by it, I think it means you don't have standing. Of course, that doesn't mean that you can't seek en banc on Cibolo, and it also doesn't mean that you could also seek cert, because there is a circuit split.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, we could do all of those things, Your Honor. That's right. However, I think a critical part in Chief Judge Owens' opinion, the part in which she dissented actually, was the point of why should the court require that? I think in light of the Supreme Court precedent, in light of the en banc court's decision, that there's not a tie goes to the runner rule. I think it's apparent to everybody that Cibolo is no longer good law, that we should apply the Supreme Court precedent. And so requiring the Supreme Court to intervene and resolve the circuit split is wasteful, to waste judicial resources, and it's unnecessary when, in light of that Supreme Court precedent and in light of the en banc decision, there shouldn't be a circuit split to begin with. So,
you know, the Supreme Court, that's what they do, right? They resolve circuit splits.
It is, Your Honor, but wouldn't we all feel better if we made their lives just a little bit easier today?
Oh, that's not our job.
We would feel better if they made our lives easier.
Yes, Your Honor, I certainly understand that. I see my time has quickly expired, and so I'll leave the remainder of my time for rebuttal unless the court has any further questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We'll turn to Ms. Noble.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Leanne Noble, and I represent the United States Department of Agriculture and Rural Utilities Service. Green Valley and Schertz have been embroiled in a years-long territorial dispute over their respective rights to provide water and wastewater services. Schertz has now brought the USDA into the fray, challenging the agency's actions under the Administrative Procedure Act. This court should affirm dismissal of Schertz's APA claims against the USDA for four independent reasons. First, as the district court held, Schertz lacks constitutional standing because it is not alleged an actual or imminent injury redressable by a judgment in Schertz's favor. And to this point, for the record, Judge Duncan, I did like your hypothetical as the constitutional standing question.
You make arguments about final agency action. Your position is there has been no final agency action.
That's correct, Your Honor.
We can talk about that, but my question is, if, let's say hypothetically, we decided there was no constitutional injury because of the Cibolo case, do we have to reach the final agency action? It's just not clear to me whether we actually have to reach that issue or is an alternative ground.
There is an alternative ground actually within constitutional standing. Importantly, the district court did not moor its constitutional standing decision only to the Cibolo case. It also moored its constitutional standing decision to the well-settled Supreme Court precedent of Lujan versus Defenders of Wildlife. And as the court knows, in Lujan, the Supreme Court held that mere someday intentions without any description of what those concrete plans are, and even without an approximate date of when that someday would occur, are simply insufficient to support a finding of actual or imminent injury. Here, the district court actually enumerated what types of factual allegations Schertz could have pleaded, that Schertz could have pleaded to satisfy this burden. It could have described the concrete plans that it had for development, where those plans were to take place, and how the contemplated loan would affect.
The question is, there are two jurisdictional issues, one about the final agency action, one about the constitutional standing. Do we have to reach both if we find a lack of jurisdiction on one?
I believe so, Your Honor. If you the lack of finality is a question of subject matter jurisdiction. It's something that cannot be waived. If the court finds
neither can standing, and so we don't have to doubly lack jurisdiction. So if we find a lack of standing, are we done, or is that issue of the finality a prelude, or it's something we have to decide before we? In other words, you cannot waive subject matter jurisdiction, but you don't have to decide 10 different versions of it. So
I apologize. I understand the question now, Your Honor. And the question is, the answer is no. If the court determines that it lacks constitutional standing under Cibolo or under the alternative argument that I just presented as to under Lujan, then it need not reach finality and it need not reach our other arguments of prudential standing.
Okay.
Yeah, because it could be a tricky The final agency action strikes me as a tricky one because, I mean, your argument, you can correct me if I'm wrong, your argument is there's still things to do with respect to the loan, right?
Yes.
I mean, at this point, can the federal government, can the USDA sort of say, no, we're not going to go ahead with the loan?
It can, Your Honor. The USDA presented a declaration that's on record on appeal 189 through 191 that provides the laundry list of decision points that remain to be made. The question before the court under finality is whether the agency's action constitutes consummation of the agency's decision-making process. And here, there are a number of decision points that remain to be made. The best case on this point is the Louisiana State versus U.S. Army Corps of Engineers case. And the reason that's on point here is because the kind of sticking point for this court in Louisiana State versus U.S. Army Corps of Engineers was the fact that there, the Army Corps of Engineers contemplated executing third-party contracts before the project could commence. In the same vein here, USDA expects Green Valley to execute third-party contracts. And the USDA must not only review those, it must approve those, it must concur in those. And so here, as in Louisiana State versus U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, there's no final agency action sufficient to waive sovereign immunity under the agency.
It is the case, I gather, that the loan hasn't closed.
That's correct, Your Honor. We've now been able to touch on the first two points, which is constitutional standing and lack of finality. This is back to the roadmap again, the third and fourth independent bases for affirming dismissal in this case are lack of prudential standing. Even if the court finds that it has subject matter jurisdiction, Schertz lacks prudential standing because Schertz's complaint amounts to a generalized grievance, and Schertz lacks prudential standing because its claim falls outside of the zone of interest intended to be protected by Section 1926B. I do want to focus on the constitutional standing argument because significant amount of attention and time has been spent to the correctness or incorrectness of the Cibolo decision. Of course, as Judge Haynes and Judge Duncan, I believe Judge Englehart also pointed out, under the rule of orderliness, this court this court is bound by the Cibolo decision. And under Cibolo, Green Valley's 2003 water loan provided federal protection to Green Valley's territory, even as to its wastewater services. As to the Lujan point, the absence of the factual allegations, the absence of concrete plans, the absence of allegations of how the contemplated loan would affect Schertz's interests, that alone is actually sufficient to affirm the district court's dismissal for lack of constitutional standing. And that disposition, to the extent that this is attractive to the court, that disposition makes it unnecessary to consider whether Cibolo is correct or incorrect. It makes it unnecessary for this court to weigh in on whether Cibolo is correct or incorrect. So the court can affirm based on Schertz's failure to plead with specificity its concrete plans. Moving now, I'm kind of jumping around here, but moving now to the prudential standing arguments. These are the alternative arguments upon which this court can actually affirm, even though the district court did not reach that. Of course, under Moncrief, the court can affirm on an issue that the district court cannot reach or did not reach. Schertz's complaint amounts to a generalized grievance, and therefore it lacks prudential standing. The court need look no further than Schertz's complaint and its appellate briefs to see that this lawsuit is at bottom an attempt, it's a procedural foothold to try to dismantle the 1926B protections that Schertz's competitor enjoys. Schertz is asking the court to wade into the arena of the representative branches of government, and this court should decline that invitation. Fourth and finally, the court should affirm judgment in favor of USDA and against Schertz because Schertz failed the zone of interest test. Under Clark, the Supreme Court has stated that the court should exclude plaintiffs whose suits are more likely to frustrate rather than further statutory objectives. this court has held that the statutory objectives of Section 1926B are to encourage rural water developments by expanding the number of customers that would get to use those rural systems. And here, of course, Schertz is seeking not to expand the number of potential users to Green Valley's rural system, but rather to constrict that. Rather than safeguarding the viability of that financial interest, Schertz is seeking to insert additional competition. The case of Beckham County Rural Water District versus Elk City out of the Western District of Oklahoma provides a compelling analysis of the zone of interest test that the United States believes provides a nice roadmap for how the court could affirm on that basis. Finally, I will note that the City of Schertz has posited that this court cannot affirm in a way that would expand the USDA's rights provided in the judgment. Of course, this court has held that it can affirm, it can modify a district court's judgment in the case of Alexander versus Trump. This court affirmed a dismissal. The district court's dismissal in APA case was for lack of subject matter jurisdiction, and this court affirmed modifying the judgment to be one for failure to state a claim on the merits. Thank you, Your Honors.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Terrell.
May it please the court. I'm Paul Terrell, and I'm here on behalf of Green Valley Special Utility District, which I'll refer to as Green Valley. I want to start by making a comment on the Article 3 jurisdiction. I agree with Ms. Noble's comments that if the court lacks Article 3 jurisdiction understanding, there's no need to reach the question of final agency action. As Judge Haynes appropriately put it, you don't have to doubly lack subject matter jurisdiction. I do want to comment on Schertz's statement that intervening Supreme Court authority makes this case a candidate for getting out of the ordinary rule of orderliness, and I'll make a couple of comments on that. The first is, if Schertz actually believed that, then after the en banc decision, in which Judge Duncan and several others wanted to overrule Cibolo, they would have appealed that case to the Supreme Court. And had the Supreme Court take the issue that it had already denied cert in previously when Cibolo took the case up. The argument regarding B is an argument that has been there from literally the first pleading that's been filed. And it's the same argument that's been made in several different instances, including very extensively in the en banc briefing and argument. So there's nothing new about the definitive article argument, and it's just a rule of statutory interpretation that in this case conflicts with another rule of statutory interpretation, which is the singular imports the plural where it's appropriate. And these are just conflicting rules of statutory interpretation. They've been raised at multiple stages in both the Cibolo case and then in the Schertz case that went en banc, and then here again. I understand that Schertz is dissatisfied with the Cibolo decision, but it is binding on this panel as
do
I see it.
Do you distinguish Nielsen and Cochise then? Because I don't think you discussed it in your brief. So tell me what your response is to the argument that changed the world, and so we're not bound by rule of orderliness anymore.
Couple of things. First is that they are just ordinary rules of statutory interpretation cases. Neither of those cases stands for the proposition that when the word the appears in any statute, not just those statutes, but that in any statute, it always controls the outcome of the case. Those cases just do not stand for that proposition. What both of those cases are examples of cases where you look at the words in the context of the statute and you apply rules of statutory interpretation. In this instance, they want to use the in a way that hooks into words that they would like to write into the statute, but which the panel and Cibolo correctly said are not there. As you know, Judge Haynes, you may remember from the unanimous opinion in that case, Judge Smith said the words that Ciblo and now Schertz want to write into the statute simply are not there. And so attaching the significance.
Facet, this use of the term that the isn't decisive wasn't period, end of story. It was because in that case, the three possible constructions of the statute, that panel concluded all would come out the same way with the argument that was being asserted on the. That's what it meant. It didn't mean the never matters. Oh my gosh, the is an irrelevant concept. And whoa, all of a sudden we find out it is relevant in these later Supreme Court cases. I mean, that, again, you have to look at the context of what the panel was saying. We didn't just say the is never decisive, have a nice day, and then the Supreme Court changed that. In fact, we were aware that the matters. And so, again, you can agree or disagree with Ciblo, but it's not like we came up with some statement that was clearly refuted later.
I couldn't have said it better myself. And the fact that the argument has been made from the first time any pleading has been filed in both the Ciblo case and the Schertz case just stands for the basic proposition that the in front of a word, in this case a noun, is one of the rules that you use of statutory interpretation, and that there's nothing remarkable about the Nielsen or Code Cheese cases. All of those arguments have been hashed and rehashed. And look, I'm happy to re-argue the merits of Ciblo if the court wants to, but I don't see the profit in it, frankly.
Well, I mean, the fact is we've all had a chance to look at it, and the question is, are we bound by it? Because if we are, it doesn't really matter what we think of it, at least at this stage.
Right. And the answer to that is yes. And the two cases that they've cited do not stand for the proposition in any way, shape, manner, or form that the word the in any statute, not just the two statutes that are at issue in those cases, is determinative. Let me just take the False Claim Act statute. The issue of the word the in that instance is it related to a United States official, and because it was False Claims Act, there was a question about whether a private party, how the private party works in the context of a statute that talks about a U.S. official. So you have to look at the in the context of the statute. There's nothing determinative about those cases that change the fact that the is simply one of the rules or one of the things that you look at in a statutory interpretation case. And again, I would say if Schertz really thought that, they would have taken the en banc opinion up to the Supreme Court to seek certiorari on that, but they did not. I do want to mention before I run out of time that if you look at just the Article III question, Schertz has effectively conceded that the Ciblo opinion as it stands today, if it applies, precludes them from having Article III standing. I do want to mention that if the court were ever to look at the question of prudential standing, which it does not have to reach if there's no Article III standing, that there is no prudential standing here. Ms. Noble mentioned the Beckham case. I'll mention it as well. It's a thoughtful analysis of prudential standing. And the basic issue there is 1926B protects rural utilities from encroaching cities that are trying to, as this court said in Bear Creek, skim the cream of their best service territory. 1926B is an anti-competitive provision. And 1926B is to protect the utility and the utility's customers. It would be an odd thing if an encroaching city that is trying to take the customers of a rural utility that's federally indebted would in fact be within the zone of interest protected by the statute. Beckham looked at that and said that's absolutely not the case, and said that it doesn't fall within the zone of interest. There's one other issue that I want to mention. It's been briefed by us, but it has not been talked extensively, and I think it's important for the court to understand, and that is, in addition to Ciblo as a as a case that forecloses Article III standing, it's important for the court to know that Texas utility law grants, in this case, a CCN to Green Valley. Texas law, in addition to federal law, Texas law provides the monopoly rights, the exclusive right to serve, that Schertz complains about it. I mention this because when you look at injury causation and redressability under Lujan, Schertz does not have the right to serve in Green Valley's territory. And it's not because of 1926B alone. It's because Green Valley has a CCN that is an exclusive right to serve. It's a 118 square mile area. It's a huge territory, and Schertz can't serve there, not just because of 1926B, but because Green Valley has a CCN granted by the Texas PUC. That's an independent basis for those monopoly rights that Schertz complains about. And so put this in another way, even if there were not a new federal loan, that doesn't give Schertz the right to serve customers inside of Green Valley's service territory. I see that my time is up. I'm happy to answer any questions if the court has any.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Terrell. We will turn back to Mr. Parker for rebuttal. You're gonna need to unmute, Mr. Parker. I know. That's a word we never used until the last year.
That's right, Your Honor. And Your Honor told me specifically to do that, and I still didn't unmute. So apologies on that. Your Honor, Schertz can serve under state law when it decertifies a portion of GB Sud's CCN. That's exactly what happened in the GB Sud case when the en banc court decided the way it did to reverse the district court's decision. The PUC's action decertifying a portion of GB Sud's CCN came back into place. And so that is exactly how we go about providing service within an area that state law previously had GB Sud as the sole provider. My friend would suggest that we should petition for cert on a case that we won. I'm not even sure that we can do that procedurally. I can tell you though that I would get some arched eyebrows in Washington if we tried to do that.
Well, and there's you good. Could say, but Judge Duncan agreed with this point, and that would be very important to them.
Yes, Your Honor. I don't.
If you did that.
Yes, Your Honor. I don't think we can appeal. We can seek certiorari on a case where we just wanted to win on this additional reason as well. But the reason we won in that case was great, because the pipes in the ground rule is the correct rule, of course. The en banc court said so. But beyond that, I think it speaks to this issue, this case here. When you have a water CCN, when you have a water 1926A loan, that provides 1926B protection for the water service to figure out if you have that protection, you look at those water pipes in the ground. Now, if I need sewer service, it's great that I have a water pipe going to my house, but that doesn't help me if the nearest sewer pipe is 30 miles away. And so the pipes in the ground test, I think, dovetails specifically here with this. The focus under the pipes in the ground test is the physical ability to make that service available. And it's that physical ability to make the service available, which was funded, created by the project, which is funded by the federal loan, which is at issue. And the physical ability / pipes in the ground test only works when the service means the service that is funded by the federal loan. Lastly, Your Honor, I just want to talk quickly quickly about the 2 points made by the USDA. On final agency action, this loan has not closed. But all that is left to do is execute the closing documents. The decisions have been made. And that's the test for final agency action. Is final agency decision-making over? And yes, it is. And don't take my word for it. Take the word of the form that they issue. This is form RD 1940-17, I believe. And it says that all of the committee and administrative determinations have been made. Closing of this loan isn't an additional decision. It's merely the implementation, the execution of the decision that's already been made. And lastly, Your Honor, on prudential standing, as the court knows, prudential standing results in dismissal with prejudice. And the court can't, absent a cross appeal, which isn't present here, can't substitute a dismissal without prejudice for a dismissal with prejudice. That would give the appellees more than they got at the district court level. For these reasons, Your Honor, we have pleaded standing, assuming Cibolo is no longer good law, as I think we have to, in light of the en banc decision and in light of recent Supreme Court precedent. We did plead sufficient facts for the immediate term. What we didn't plead, the district court held, was sufficient facts to say that we have an injury after that water loan expires in 2043. We didn't have enough injury, or we didn't plead enough injury to show that 17-year period from 2043 to 2060. But if Cibolo is not good law, then we have injury today. We've pleaded that, and therefore we ask the court to reverse the decision of the district court. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. We have everybody's arguments. The case is under submission, and you are free to go.
Thank you, Your Honor.